Introduction to hashtag Russian censor files. This hashtag is used to describe the largest hack of government data and evidence of censorship that you have never heard of. The group behind this hack has been labeled the successor to WikiLeaks. They are the Belarusian cyber partisans. Along with cyber partisans are distributed denial of secrets. You can view information about the cyber partisans on many different platforms. However, their Telegram is where you'll find the most up-to-date information on what it is that they are sharing. Distributed denial of secrets has a more robust wiki setup with a lot of information about the organization. Research has been done on leaks that it hosts, as well as links to other pertinent information. So, what information has been hacked and made available to researchers? Hacked documents and correspondence from the internal network of the General Radio Frequency Center, or the GRFC, subdivision of the Roskomnadzor. The Roskomnadzor is also known, or AKA, as the censorship department within the Russian government. And you might be a person saying, well, yeah, no kidding. We know that the Russian government censors people. A lot of governments censor people, including the United States, and that's all true. However, what you'll see is a shocking level of detail, organization, broadness and scope, as well as developments or proposed developments of tools, including AI, to automate searches for censorship. This is important not just because it's happening in Russia, but because if it's happening in Russia, it's going to happen in other countries as well. There's another motive to this as well. And that motive is essentially solidarity. But with the rise of anti-imperialist ideology within Western left spaces, which places government at the center of analysis as opposed to people, excuses and conspiracy to deny bad actions of governments outside of the United States proliferate. The influence of ideas like Eurasianist and multipolar propaganda within anti-war spaces results in campist mentalities that any government action is justified if done so in the name of anti-Westernism, regardless of the harm done. This is to serve Westerners as an education point on conditions within Russia, with an emphasis on the anti-war movements and broader protest movements within Russia. The goal of that is to form solidarity with those protesters, activists, and victims, as opposed to the geopolitical aims of governments based in conspiracy. As mentioned earlier, the Roskomnadzor is the Russian federal executive agency responsible for monitoring, controlling, and censoring Russian mass media. Topics within this leak are broad and range from depictions of drug use to suicide. And these are somewhat legitimate topics for potential censoring of graphic images, let's say. However, more interesting are documents that discuss the censoring of protest movements, anti-war rhetoric, specifically with Ukraine, and criticism of Vladimir Putin. So we know that this was a leak and that leak came from a hack, and that hack attacked or focused on the governmental department in the Russian government that is in charge of censoring individuals and sorting through information to be blocked on the internet. Along with the massive censorship over the invasion of Ukraine, there are many other topics, too many for one slide or even for this discussion, but in general, some of the larger ones. Reports on the presence of protest moods in social networks, meaning that there were reports done on the simple moods of people or observations of things happening. Reports and documentation of calls for protests on social networks. So, not just protests that happened, but proposed protests. And this could be as simple as somebody expressing their own personal opinion about what they think should happen. Reports and documentation of criticism for the Russian government on social networks. And this is extremely broad. Just generally, any oppositional or any dissenting voice is cataloged, documented, monitored, and controlled. News analytics and reports on foreign agents. We'll get to this, but in short, foreign agents is a term that initially was applied to NGOs or non-government organizations with Russia, and this was a law that happened many years ago. Now, this has since been broadened more recently to essentially include anybody that is presenting information contrary to the official government line, including individuals. Workbooks, so Excel workbooks, containing hundreds of links for censorship that you will see some of in this video. However, in video two, you will see many. Reports on the status of Vladimir Putin's health. Reports on the status of registry entries for censorship. And many more. Again, at the end, I will show you a hacked document translated to English that talks about how automation of censorship can occur with AI. So there are many different topics. This is just a broad level overview. Speaking to episodes, this is episode one. In this episode, we are going to discuss the hashtag Russian censor files, what they are, why they are important, who it was that obtained them, who currently stores them, when these events occurred, and research that's already been conducted on the contents of the hack. In episode two, this is going to be an overview of what I found in hashtag Russian censor files. I was granted access to DDoS via the Belarusian Cyberpartisans group to examine the collection of hacked Russian files. I will show some to you. Episode three is going to discuss the impact of this leak and the role of groups such as Cyberpartisans. It also examines censorship and abuse of Russian anti-war activists in the context of a fractured left view of what's occurring in Ukraine and Russia. So who, and also let's move into when. So more about the Belarusian Cyberpartisans, a Belarusian decentralized anonymous activist collective, part of a broader Belarusian opposition movement, engaged in anti-cyber surveillance, anti-cyber censorship, internet activism, internet vigilantism, and anti-government activism. DDo Secrets Collective, a publisher and archive for data leaked in the public interest. Formed in 2018 after years of informal partnerships among members, organized crime and corruption reporting project, European investigative collaborations, the Silver Lining Project at Harvard University's Institute of Quantitative Social Science and Social Media Analysis Toolkit, SMAT. I have used SMAT in the past in previous videos for visual representations of data, but also for my own research. Belarusian Cyberpartisans. They formed in September of 2020 after protests over re-election of Alexander Lukashenko. The protests were brutally suppressed by police and security forces that had support of the Russian government. In 2021, the Belarusian government declared the Information Resources Cyberpartisans to be an extremist group and a terrorist organization. This article from Engadget.com discusses the Belarusian hackers who are trying to overthrow the Lukashenko regime. They've reportedly infiltrated almost every part of the government, according to this article. I will attach this article for you to read if you'd like more background information. However, it provides a high-level overview of who the organization is and what it is that they did during the 2020 fraudulent election of Alexander Lukashenko. Another article from Medusa, which is also linked, provides more information on these hacks of the Belarusian government in 2020. Amongst a lot of really interesting information that was obtained, including video footage of police abusing protesters, are audio recordings. And this audio recording specifically is of interest. In this recording, there's a conversation between Lukashenko's press secretary and the commander of the Minsk OMON, or police department. And in this conversation, the discussion ends with a driven hunt of protesters. And in quotes, "Ribbons are secondary, we need heads." And the press secretary offers or wishes the police good hunting for protesters. So the Belarusian cyber partisans are the group that conducted the hacks, not only of what we just looked at in Belarus, but on Russian government files that we're going to discuss in this video. Distributed Denial of Secrets Collective is the organization that stores, organizes, and makes public to certain individuals these hacked documents. They are best known for the June 2020 publication of a large collection of internal police documents known as Blue Leaks. The site's leaks provided information for Donald Trump's second impeachment hearing as well, and is one of the best public repositories of all the Russian files leaked since the invasion of Ukraine. Distributed Denial of Secrets Collective has been referred to as the successor to WikiLeaks, even having eclipsed Julian Assange. I'll link other sources in the description below, but this is just one article from Wired that provides a nice overview. For the past year, WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange has sat in London jail awaiting extradition to the U.S. This week, the U.S. Justice Department piled on yet more hacking conspiracy allegations against him, all related to his decade plus at the helm of an organization that exposed reams of government and corporate secrets to the public. But in Assange's absence, another group has picked up where WikiLeaks left off, and is also picking new fights. For roughly the past year and a half, a small group of activists known as Distributed Denial of Secrets, or DDO Secrets, has quietly but steadily released a stream of hacked and leaked documents, from Russian oligarchs' emails to the stolen communications of Chilean military leaders to shell company databases. The article goes on, for DDO Secrets, the firefight has already started. On Tuesday evening, a media attention grew around the Blue Leaks release. Twitter banned the group's account, citing a policy that it doesn't allow the publication of hacked information. The company followed up with an even more drastic step, removing tweets that link to DDO Secrets' website, which maintains a searchable database of all of its leaks, and suspending some accounts retroactively for linking to the group's material. From the start, DDO Secrets has distinguished itself by its willingness to publish not just the same sort of raw leaks and hacked files that WikiLeaks published for years, but also some that even WikiLeaks refused to do. The group's first major release after its founding in 2018 was a 175 gigabyte cache of Russian emails. WikiLeaks had obtained but declined to publish some of the same documents. The article goes on to discuss how Distributed Denial of Secrets has differentiated itself from WikiLeaks while also learning some lessons. Perhaps most importantly, Emma Best says, DDO Secrets wants to avoid the cult of personality that formed around Julian Assange. The WikiLeaks leader had exerted near monarchic rule before being indicted for computer hacking conspiracy and arrested in London's Ecuadorian embassy, where he had sought asylum last spring. Best says DDO Secrets is moving toward a co-op model with a horizontal structure of leadership with no single person in charge of the group's direction. And that article helps explain some things, not all things. I was perplexed after having found out about this that, why was there so little about it on Twitter? I would think that with all of the content and all of the profiles and all the hashtags surrounding what is kind of a cult of personality around Julian Assange, and then how that name has been transformed into an amalgamation of other things as well. With all this effort and focus on that individual in WikiLeaks, how there is just very little on this. And after having read some of those articles, now it makes sense. Twitter essentially censored it all. I looked up hashtag Russian files and conducted my own search after trying some automated searches and just finding nothing. And in a manual search, which is anecdotal and of course inherently flawed, I found roughly 113 tweets that still exist, and almost all of those tweets were from foreign media outlets that had written stories on this when it first broke, or the Belarusian group itself with some anonymous postings as well. But still, give or take 113 tweets on what is one of the most significant leaks in government data involving censorship of citizens in years, with organizations that are essentially taking up where WikiLeaks is left off, and in many ways, doing a better job at horizontal organization, at storage, and about thinking of how this is going to work moving forward as a co-op, let's say. At first, I thought that on Twitter, there's just a lot of grifting profiles, and we'll get to that too. But it's more than just that. It's more than just people choosing not to talk about it. It's actually that this was literally censored on Twitter. Part of this is that Twitter just removed everything from this group. But there's another part of it too. And the other part is, why is it with the proliferation of individuals who, whether we want to say genuinely or more cynically for money or what have you, just a huge amount of high profile accounts on Twitter who discuss both censorship as well as Russia and Ukraine. Why is it that none of these people are talking about this? You would think that those who are taking up the mantle from WikiLeaks, and you would think that, as stated before, this huge leak of information of censorship, including AI that we'll get to, which is just vastly, informational as well as frightening and something we should all know about. You would think that these people would be talking about, but they're not. And I just grabbed some random profiles. Jackson Hinkle, he talks about the war in Ukraine all the time. He was at Rage Against the War Machine rally, which is supposedly an anti-war movement protest. And he calls himself the most censored man on YouTube. He has not said a word about this. Lee Camp, someone else who has discussed what's going on in Russia and Ukraine a lot, who also talks about censorship a lot. He says he is the most censored comedian in America. He has said nothing about this. All of those Julian Assange accounts, you would think that some of them would be talking about this awesome new group or organization that's picking up where, WikiLeaks is kind of left off, and this great group of hacker activists who have been doing all of this excellent work. You think that they would be mentioning it as well, but they're not. And then perhaps the king of it all, Matt Taibbi, you would think that Twitter files, which is predicated on the idea of censorship on Twitter, you would think that he would be talking about this too. He is not either. And so then we need to question why. And I have to tell you, it's not just these people. If you look for anybody who focuses on censorship or who, in an anti-imperial way, anti-war method, if any of these high profile accounts on Twitter, if you look at any of them, and I have a montage on the screen if you're listening to the audio, ranging from Matt Taibbi to Benjamin Norton to the People's Party to George Galloway, just the Gray Zone, so many individuals, Glenn Greenwald, Jimmy Dore, Green Party members. When you look for this hashtag, nothing comes up. And I'll tell you also, if you look for protest in Russia, if you look for cyber partisans, if you look for DDoS, none of there's nothing. None of these things come up with any results. And it's because they're choosing to not talk about it. So now we know about the absence of reporting. This information was banned on Twitter. There are a lot of anti-war accounts, anti-imperialist accounts that choose not to talk about this. And that's a much larger topic for other videos, right? Again, you can look back at the YouTube page and look for videos that discuss why that might be. But just generally speaking, this is very underreported, in my opinion, in the West. There were some mainstream news articles about it. However, generally speaking, this is not a meta-analysis of them. They were very broad in scope, meaning a hack occurred, it happened on this day. This is the group that did it. And this is, some of the themes that came out of it, generally speaking. And most of that had to do with censorship. So it lacked a lot of nuance, and it lacked context, and it lacked questions or propositions for future questions, such as how would this impact protesters potentially in other countries like the United States. Also, I found too in some Western media that groups were incorrectly attributed to the hack as well. Vice, for instance, had an article that put this to anonymous. So the reporting in the West, I feel like, was basic, and some of it spotty when it comes to actual factual information. But most of the reporting comes from these articles, and these articles are from publications mostly from Eastern Europe that can be found on the Distributed Denial of Secrets Wiki. Most of them aren't in English, but we can translate. And this is where most of the information moving forward is going to come from for this video. I translated a lot of it. At the end, I'll show you a hacked slideshow, a PowerPoint that one of these media outlets linked to their article as kind of a teaser into what will be the next episode, in which I show you some of the hacked documents that I found after I went in to the archive and I looked at it for myself. So what was found? Here are some categories. It's not all of them. This is a huge amount of information, but generally speaking, these are some of the high-level groupings, I think, or buckets that we could use to describe the content of this hack. Censorship and suppression of the following. Any and all anti-war protests. That can mean actually gathering and having a physical protest, or just expressing a dissenting view of the war in Ukraine on social media and the post. General protests in Russia, and these include individual people picketing something. They include environmental protests, opposition figures, etc. Military conscription for mobilization. Anything considered relatively associated with LGBTQ individuals. Vladimir Putin's health, specifically cancer. Opposition parties and figures, foreign agents, which we discussed before. Development of troll farms and AI for automation. Organizers of the dissemination of information. We'll get to what that means. If you're watching the video, there's a large picture here. This is the building where employees worked at, who spent their day manually looking through anything from mainstream media to social media posts, etc., to be censored. So this is where folks worked at. This information is from iStories. I'm going to try to attribute things to the source that I got them from, but just in general, the rest of this comes from the sources from the wiki that we just saw. So those articles. The Roscommons are employees, roughly 1,000 people that search for online materials critical of Russia or Vladimir Putin. Reports are sent to the Prosecutor General's Office, the Ministry of Internal Affairs, and the Federal Security Service of Russia, or FSB. Roscommons are also monitors social tensions, dissent, and protests in Russia. The GRFC supports monitoring efforts used to generate reports for proposed suppression and censorship. Monitoring is not relegated to mass media, bloggers, social media users, and the actions of ordinary citizens are also cataloged and reported. GRFC employees also predicted what might cause tension in the future. This is a graphic from iStories, and it's a top 10 reasons for a street protest in Russia. Of course, number one, far and away, the most significant is Russia's war against Ukraine. Second, the actions of authorities and political prisoners. Third, ecological problems. Moving down the list, infrastructure problems, shared equity, construction fraud, infringement of media freedom, infringement on human rights, distance, online education, labor conditions, medical system problems being at the bottom. So at the top, Russia's war against Ukraine, of course, being the predominant, and actions of authorities slash political prisoners are very directly tied to that. Here's another graphic from iStories, or Important Stories. At the bottom, it does cite the source, hashtag Russian censor files, data from reports of the Roscommon subsidiary from 116 days of 2022. So this is from the leaked information, right? Most anti-war actions are grassroots initiatives of locals. We have local residents and activists, public organizations, regional authorities, et cetera. And we see that the overwhelming number of protests are from local residents and activists themselves for anti-war. In support of the war, we see a lot of regional authorities, political parties, state employees, et cetera, being engaged instead. And this makes a lot of sense. So in terms of the anti-war sentiment, it poses an 89% percentile of local residents and activists being engaged in anti-war protests, while only 23% of local residents and activists were engaged in activities in support of the war. So what does this look like in terms of numbers or statistics involving what's actually found in the hacked information? Well, Russian censors blocked more than 136,000 materials on the invasion of Ukraine. A side note, I couldn't really fit this neatly anywhere, so I'll just say it here. There is any reference to a war in Ukraine, any reference to the Russian war in Ukraine is cited as well to be censored. Instead, the official government line and terminology used is special military operation. And so you see that often in documents going back and forth from the leak. So Russian censors blocked 136,000 materials on the invasion of Ukraine, for which they would instead call special military operation. The Roscommons reportedly deleted 150,000 anti-war posts from various social media sites. Access was limited to 68 websites of Russian opposition resources. Over 540 Ukrainian websites were blocked. We're going to get to this later, but this is specifically interesting when we talk about the occupied regions of Ukraine. Task Belarus included the compilation of spreadsheets to track thousands of publications on the Belarusian websites as well. A quote from one of the iStories articles: "Since February 2022, the war in Ukraine has become the primary topic of GRFC's reports on negative publications about Putin. In most cases, the authorities wrote that the president of the Russian Federation unleashed a war, illegally invading the territory of a neighboring country, sent the Russian military to death, provoked the consolidation of Western states against the Russian Federation, and that he is fully responsible for the consequences, economic, political, and isolating, because of the decision he made to start the special operation." GRFC employees reported of the media discourse during the first month of the war. Employees of the GRFC follow publications about the war in Ukraine every day. They were specifically told to search for any material that discredited the Russian military as to prevent, quotes, disruption of public order. Russian censors considered all messages about the murder of the civilian population of Ukraine, the destruction of social infrastructure, the losses of the Russian army, and the refusal of Russian soldiers to participate in the war as such. The greatest number of anti-war demonstrations found in the leaked materials were registered in St. Petersburg, then Moscow. Main triggers of protests were the invasion of Ukraine and dissatisfaction with officials and political persecution. Going down the list, environmentalism would be next. By November of 2022, 74% of the media in the Zaporizhia region and 63% of media in the Kherson region were labeled as pro-Russian by staff of the GRFC. All other media outlets were either already blocked or were expecting to be blocked. In addition to traditional media, Russian censors monitored messages in city-specific social network groups and even the social networks of local residents. And if you're unaware, these two regions are in what was occupied Ukraine, or still is some regions of occupied Ukraine. What does this mean? It means that if you lived in a region that was occupied by the Russian military, 74% and or 63% of media were labeled as pro-Russian. Everything else had already been censored and blocked. So all information you're essentially getting involving whether we're talking about mainstream media, social networks, or even social networks of local residents were censored. Anti-war messaging was specifically targeted, along with calls for gatherings or protests. Other protests were also cataloged that were not related to the invasion of Ukraine, as we talked about before. A separate effort was made to censor information coming into the occupied territories of Ukraine. Russian censors blocked 260 Ukrainian media sites from Russian-occupied areas of Ukraine, along with Western media. So by and large, the controlling of the narrative and the censoring of any criticism regarding the war in Ukraine is paramount to the modern efforts to block information, at least from hashtag Russian censor files leaks. But there's more. From September 3rd to 4, 2022, approximately 700 messages talking about military conscription were cataloged by the CPR. For each, it indicated the author, the information known about him slash her, the audience, the number of shares, and the tone of the message, positive, neutral, or negative. This is from another source that wrote an article from Pivot.Quebec. You'll see when we get into the spreadsheets the granular nature of this censorship. It's not just blocking things, it's looking at metadata and cataloging it and reporting it. And this is just one example of, for each indication of this, we're talking about the author of these, right? It involved information known about that person. It talks about the audience for whom this information might be shared. It talks about the number of shares, but also just the tone too. And this type of, specificity is somewhat shocking, I think. Not that it happens, but at the level that it happened, the amount of people that this applied to. Entire Excel spreadsheets were found monitoring activities surrounding mobilization. 1,700 posts were from Telegram and VK alone. VK is a social media platform used often in Russia. I used it heavily in the last video I made about Novorossiya. And if you're not sure about mobilization, that's essentially, maybe in Western terms, something akin to a draft, right? I found this quote interesting from iStories again, because it's something that I hear. And it can mean different things depending on who is saying it. But in short, where are all the protests at in Russia? This belief that because we're not visibly seeing a lot of protests in Western media, that there aren't protests. And if there aren't protests, then people must agree with the war in Ukraine. I have a quote from an anthropologist from the iStories article. Quote, "Propaganda instills a person with a sense of loneliness," says that others will not come out to protest. Western claims by the media and experts that Russians aren't taking to the streets work in the exact same way as the attempts by Russian authorities to silence protests. In other words, the protests are happening. There is, as we see, and we will see, especially in the next video, there is a heavy-handed approach to censoring any anti-war protest sentiment at all, comments on social media. However, they are happening. And that by saying they're not, just because they're not immediately in our faces in other countries, does a lot of what the propaganda that the Russian government uses to prevent protests, it has much of the same effect. Along with monitoring, cataloging, tracking anti-war sentiments, and specifically information surrounding or comments surrounding mass mobilization and conscription of soldiers for the invasion of Ukraine. Along with that was an effort to unblock pro-Russian voices on foreign social networks. Very interesting that the main effort of this group is to censor within Russia. However, they also have an auxiliary or other task as well, which is to unblock pro-Russian voices. So the Roscommons were assisted pro-government commentators and foreign social networks, even if they were not associated with the Russian state, meaning it wasn't just state officials. It could just be media people that are very pro-Russian. Examples included the Wagner PMC founder, Yevgeny Prigozhin, and propagandist Zakhar Prelepin and Tigran Kaussian. I did the best with the names. This included officials as well, such as Ramzan Kadyrov on Instagram, Vitaly Milonov on TikTok, and Yevgeny Popov on YouTube. Again, I did the best with names. These were successes, or there were successes, excuse me, such as Yevgeny Popov on Twitter being brought back. So this is interesting because it's not only a defensive measure, right? It's not just an isolationist measure and Russia trying to block all information so that the government controls all narrative within the country. It's also trying to control the narrative in other countries. And by that, I mean attempting to go out and specifically assist. And in sometimes examples included directly contacting Twitter or YouTube, for instance, to say, this person needs to their profile needs to be brought back. And in some cases, such as Popov, they're on Twitter, there were successes with this. So the propaganda doesn't just begin at the border of Russia, right? The Russian government is leveraging social media, as we all know, to also spread this propaganda to other countries. So now moving on to the next topic of foreign agents, which we kind of discussed already. After Russia's full-scale invasion of Ukraine, almost all independent media was labeled as a foreign agent. Prior to Russia's invasion, the label of foreign agent had been relegated to NGOs. And these NGOs are non-government organizations, in the past, human rights organizations, for instance. And this was used as a tactic by the Russian government to limit and control the movements of NGOs within Russia. So you'd have to go and register as an NGO entity, and then oftentimes you would be accompanied with somebody from the government on whatever it was that you were doing, right? So that label no longer exists just for like nonprofit organizations, like a humanitarian organization or pro-LGBTQ group looking at persecution, for instance, in Russia. Now that label a foreign agent has been expanded to include individual journalists. So if you wrote an opinion piece saying that the war in Ukraine is bad or flawed, or that some propaganda isn't true, or that Vladimir Putin is just executing it improperly, you are now considered a foreign agent. Activists, of course, are considered foreign agents. Actors, and there is information about this, we'll get to the in the third video about plays and movies being censored. So if you're an actor that's just part of a production that might be seen as providing contrary or dissident information, you are now a foreign agent. Musicians, I myself saw in email exchanges lyrics of songs that were seen to be as maybe anti-war or anti-Putin. Those are emailed back and forth by these people, in these government organizations. Anyone considered an oppositionist is now considered a foreign agent, right? Per those laws that were created now a number of years ago. iStories found 940 names of individuals, not organizations, just people like you and I, not even actors or activists, just people labeled as foreign agents, but there might be more. A list of 472 opinion users was used to shadow their social media posts and other activities. So it wasn't just one day somebody being fed up, maybe discussing this at work and venting on VK and saying, Putin doesn't know what he's doing. This war is awful. It's not just the censoring and blocking of that and collection of metadata on who made that, who saw that, the amount of times it was shared, et cetera. It's also then the activities of the person who posted that moving forward. Here's another graphic from Important Stories, labeled opinion leaders monitored by the Roskomnadzor. We show the table as it was compiled by their staff. This is one out of 47, right, pages. So I'm not going to go through all the names, mostly because I'll butcher them, but just looking at, you know, who these people are, there is a singer, there is a rap artist, there are two directors, there is a founder of the Help Needed Foundation. So these aren't oppositional political figures. These aren't established opposition groups of activists. These are rap artists. These are singers and directors of movies and productions. And there's 47 pages of this. And this is just for this opinion leader label. Now, you could be a foreign agent, you could be other things as well. Or you could just not be labeled. It could just be that you are in one of these Excel spreadsheets with the link to what you posted along with all of the metadata. Next. Organizers of the dissemination of information on the internet. This was very interesting. So we just talked about how granular this got down to essentially just ordinary citizens, right? And their posts, artists, directors being labeled opinion leaders or foreign agents, et cetera. But then this kind of goes the other way. And this is a special category for Russian and foreign companies. They are required to store data and metadata of users' electronic messages in Russia. The messages must be transferred to Russian special services along with keys to decrypt encrypted messages. The company must provide methods for this transmission of data to FSB, which is Russian Security Services. Public comment on this activity is prohibited. The companies cannot comment on what it is that they handed over to FSB. They cannot comment on the method that they constructed for this transmission. The exchange can't be commented on either. One of the employees that worked here, we saw the building that they worked in. 102 new employees were hired at the start of the Russian invasion of Ukraine. Applicants went through background checks, including testimonials on them, including any communication or support for opposition figures such as A. Navalny. This is from iStories. iStories research also found that Putin was criticized most of all last fall in connection with the mobilization, so the conscription of military soldiers, his 70th birthday, and the explosion on the Crimean Bridge. The GRFC monitors publications critical of the president using a variety of methods. These include brand analytics, media, social media monitoring systems, and manual searches. Reports of negative publications about Putin were prepared daily and then later switched to weekly because of the amount of information being found. Vladimir Putin's health was also a large topic for these employees to search for. Spreadsheets were found monitoring comments on YouTube, Telegram, and other social media sites referencing Vladimir Putin's health. Reports on Putin's critical state of health are regularly compiled for the leak. Spreadsheets were found monitoring comments on YouTube and Telegram criticizing Vladimir Putin's health. The majority of the comments in the spreadsheet contained references to the phrase, "Putin has cancer." Job candidates were asked to monitor newsworthy topics about the president's worsening health as a test task for employment. The promotion of non-traditional sexual relations were also a target. Non-traditional and spiritual slash moral values are used as a catch-all for anything that is not heterosexual. So essentially, anything involving pride, LGBTQ rights, the experience of a gay man in Russia, non-government organizations talking about human rights, all of these things are get grouped into non-traditional and spiritual moral values and are blocked or censored in Russia. What also happens too, and this has happened in past laws, is that this non-traditional and spiritual moral value can be coupled with child abuse. So in an attempt to connect LGBTQ people with essentially pedophiles or predatory individuals towards youth. I myself found a lot of documentation that was, you know, geared towards the banning of any kind of pro-LGBTQ information in Russia. But This topic that we're moving into, I think, is pertinent to everybody because this is not meant to say that Russia is evil. Look at how bad they are to anti-war protesters and how they're censoring LGBTQ people, etc. All governments do that on some level or to some degree. This is interesting because these are propositions of what the government wants to do moving forward, and I think that we can all agree that if one government, regardless of what government that is looking or seeking to censor more and use different techniques or technologies to do that, well, then other governments, including the United States, are going to copycat that if they haven't started that already. So what was found? Building a troll farm. Roscommon pushed for the creation of its own bot. A farm to sow chaos and extreme opinions and discussions. The project was entitled Building a Troll Farm. The effort was led by a deputy head of department, and its expected completion date was of mid-May 2023. So building a troll farm. This was referred to as creating a quote-unquote clean internet. Bot farms would amplify official Russian media content. Bot farms would solve complex CAPTCHA systems and fill social media feeds with content to imitate user activity, including pictures, posts, imaginary personal data, etc. Bots, etc. It was meant to target VK, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, YouTube, as well as many other sites listed too. The implementation of image and video recognition was also suggested in the Unified Analysis module. This would leverage artificial intelligence to locate content for censorship. Metadata, including time, place of publication, author, and individuals in pictures, would be created or collected. Now, building off of simple bot farms, which I think most of us are aware of, right? This is where we're moving into some interesting and scary territory. The implementation of image and video recognition in the Unified Analysis module. This would leverage artificial intelligence to locate content for censorship. Metadata, including time, place of publication, author, and individuals in pictures, would be collected. And it was built off of research by Konstantin Zudov. Quotes from an iStory article. In addition to information about terrorism, drugs, and suicide methods, the system should detect calls for demonstrations and good attitudes toward them, justification of and calls for the violent overthrow of power, as well as insults to the president, photoshops, demotivators, cartoons, caricatures, sexual insinuations, obscene vocabulary in relation to him, and comparing the president to negative characters and condemning activities, e.g., Hitler, werewolf, dictator, racist, traitor. So AI, one to analyze images and pictures to collect metadata, like the people in them, when it was taken, where it was taken, but also to search for cartoons and caricatures, right? So not just anti-war things, we're talking about protests, even just criticisms of the president in cartoon form. Right, being captured using this new artificial intelligence technology. And so here's what many of you have been waiting for. Here's an example of the hacked information. I didn't hack it, so it's not on me. This is now open to the public. But this document or report describes what it is that I just read, talking about the creation of bot farms as well as artificial intelligence. To essentially collect metadata on images, whether they're talking about protests or whether they're just criticizing the president in a caricature. So this is what one of them looks like. And I'm just going to scroll through. It's not in English. I'm not translating this. This was cited by iStories. So this is not one that I collected. And here's another example of some of that leaked information. This is a PowerPoint presentation that was discussing specifically the artificial intelligence or what we'll see as being like ocular technology to essentially be able to collect metadata from images. Now, again, this isn't very useful to us. It's all in Russian. Now, I don't speak Russian, so I had to translate this, and there's a lot of services out there which allows you to translate information or words on pictures. And that's what I did. So let's take a look. Okay, this will be a precursor to the next video. This is a translation of not all of it, but some of the key slides from that PowerPoint, which is of that leaked data. So here we go, the PowerPoint. The results of research work studying the capabilities of AI to detect violations in images and video materials. Description of the problem, the growth of volumes of multimedia information on the internet, social networks, forums, instant messaging, etc. The increase in the volume of prohibited information in images and videos, extremist terrorist activity. Recall that cyber partisans are labeled as terrorists, so they would be included in this, right? So some of this terminology, you have to use your imagination as to what it really means. Calls for mass riots, that's just protests. Information about methods of committing suicide, propaganda of narcotics, involvement of minors in the commission of illegal activities. Some of that is valid, but some of that also goes to the LGBTQ stuff as well that we talked about. An issue that they're finding is that the inability to identify such materials in the manual mode, meaning that the folks that they're employing can't, there's not enough manpower to go and find all of this on the internet. And essentially the problem is that they're not censoring enough and they want to censor more information. So the scientific and technical task is to study the possibility of using artificial intelligence technologies, computer vision, to identify signs of violations of the legislation of the Russian Federation. Again, using AI tech to identify signs of violations of legislation. Imagine what that might mean in the United States. Research results achieved. So a set of documentation for the development of Oculus services. Oculus is that ability to strip metadata from images. Methods of detection and recognition in images and videos. So this can include visual images, text, or symbols and watermarks. Oculus layout demonstrating the operability of the proposed algorithms and marked up data sets for training artificial intelligence modules. The report recommended methods for detecting violations, recognition of a mass gathering of people, so calls for rallies, comma, unauthorized actions. So if you're on BK and you say, hey, let's meet up to protest the war in Ukraine, this ocular artificial intelligence is going to strip the metadata from that. Protest activity. And protest activity underneath it has calls for the violent overthrow of the government. These two are somewhat inseparable. There's no opposition allowed. And so if you are critical of the government, you are kind of by default calling for the overthrow of the government in the eyes of the government organization. Face recognition, recognition of specific personalities, accounting for the presence of various signs, masks, beards, etc., and age determination. Text and images and videos, URLs, dates, and other texts. So these are the recommended methods for detecting violations of legislature in Russia. This is a concept kind of flowchart or map of how the Oculus functions, would function, the functional architecture of it. Not going to mean much for us, but it's just showing where they're at in this. They are a sub Visio, essentially, of how this concept is going to play out and how it's going to work, technically speaking. Layout and functions, working with modules and data sets, image classifying, identification of personalities in the frame, detecting symbols, text recognition, and a pipeline for detecting signs of ZI in a video file. So I'm not going to go through all the bullet points. You can pause this if you want and look at it, but essentially discussing how this is going to function, right? Not just the Visio flowchart, the technicality of it, but what that means and with context. And here are images, right, of with red boxes around them showing, you know, the what metadata is it that they would be looking at or collecting from images. Some of these are about suicide. Some of these are about one is just the flag of NATO. One of them is, you know, someone wearing a mask associated with COVID. So this is a broad net, artificial intelligence, ocular automation of censorship, ranging from whatever your mind can conceptualize when it comes to opposing traditional values, anything legislated in the Russian government, anything the Russian government doesn't want out there. Roadmap for the creation of the Oculus subsystem. So I'm not going to go through this. This is technical, but it's interesting because it also shows a budget too. So total amount in thousands of rubles broken up by the software and the hardware that would be necessary to create this. On that roadmap for the creation of Oculus subsystem, continuing, we have some terms, and the terms are dates. So this is interesting because we have different quarters, beginning on this table in 2022, but going into 2024. It states on this side, the implementation is supposed to be through the conclusion of a multi-stage contract with stages of 6 months each. So this is the project map, essentially, of how this is going to happen. Proposed research projects for 2023 into next year. The analysis of the effectiveness of old and testing of new AI models for the task of improving the quality of detection of prohibited graphic content, recognition of entities in the video, specifically personalities and objects, and extracting relationships between objects in the video. The expected effect of the creation of the Oculus subsystem, reduction of labor costs for manual detection of signs of violations of the legislation of the Russian Federation and images and video materials, improving the quality of detecting signs of violations in the legislation of the Russian Federation in images and videos up to 85% effectiveness, reduction of errors and partial elimination of the human factor in the framework of search and recognition, an increase in the speed of information processing, and as a consequence, an increase in the throughput of the process of detecting signs of violations of the legislation of the Russian Federation and images and video materials by processing up to 200,000 images per day. Massive, massive amounts of automated censorship. And that's where we're going to stop, because this leads us into the next video, which is going to take a second for me to put together. I've done all the research, but now I got to organize it and make it in a way that it is going to be presentable for you all. But the next video, I was granted access to distributed denial of secrets content to their library of this information via the Belarusian cyber partisans themselves. I reached out via social media chat, talked to a spokesperson, was deferred to DDoS. They set me up with a password, and I got access. So I was able to examine the collection of hacked Russian files, not as thoroughly as what some of these other publications have done, because they have teams of people, or this is their job. This is not my job. However, I did conduct to the best of my ability and to the best scope of what's realistic for one person, a meta-analysis, and I'm going to show that to you in the next video. If you're watching, some of the images behind on this PowerPoint are some of the actual documents that I got a hold of. You can see some of them are in Russian, some of them are links, some of them are in English. That's because I translated them using my own, essentially, ocular technology to translate. I shouldn't say my own, that which already exists. But that's going to be the next video. I don't really have a whole lot of concluding words for this, for the first session, except that I hope this shows, one, that there are people protesting in Russia, that there are many people protesting in Russia, that the war in Ukraine is not overwhelmingly supported, that even the regime, the current president, isn't overwhelmingly supported. And that by saying that, it in no way eliminates all the wrong that any other country does, including the United States. And in fact, by looking at the methods and the means of how Russia was censoring and tracking anybody, let alone anti-war protesters, that by looking at their methods and their scary proposed methods moving forward, specifically with artificial intelligence and ocular technologies, that we might be able to become better informed about what's already happening or what we should predict or expect to be happening in the United States and other countries as well.